So yesterday we did one group first, so today we'll do the other group first, and if they stop speaking, the other group can start speaking again. Okay. Yes?
About interest.
About interest.
Interest. I was thinking about when I'm sitting, sometimes I'm not looking outside, but I can the light, the texture.
Yeah.
I'm not looking at objects,
yeah.
Just interested in how the seeing's taking place.
Yeah.
And the same with hearing. Sometimes not hearing any particular sounds, just almost the silence, the lack of sound.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, so when does interest become the movement of the mind towards the pleasure, towards desire, or towards aversion? Where is the... How do you talk about the difference between interest and attraction? Or interest? I think interest and attraction.
Well, if that happens, I guess. Tua, di ni, same with Zandra, but Tua, Aming or Tu, the Ditanere, Chao, the Ditanere, Chao, the Ditanere, the Katli, Tamashira, the Diamond, Tu, Sinzari, the interest can it cutly Yagabe Yabda.
No,
Pulunu Tinle, to be generated, Di Hanakubulu Quale.
Oh, interest are the signals are feeling that you do that. Say she didn't do that. And I'm glad to do that.
For
some states on you, good. Who can stay so in the two feeling at the moon? I also say to do a station ship. No, poor Rashima. So, they think I see.
He said it's very easy. You can tell by your feelings, whether it's just interest or whether it's starting to veer towards attachment.
Mm-hmm.
And when whatever you're feeling, whatever the mind is, doing is wholesome.
Mm.
There's a particular feeling that's associated with wholesome activity in the mind.
Mm.
If it starts to become slightly unwholesome, tensions, subtle tension starts to build in the mind. So.
Mm.
Have to. So there's interest, but if you start wanting too much to know what's happening or wanting too much to get an answer, you can feel the tension.
The
state of mind loses its stability or balance.
Agitation.
If you don't feel peaceful anymore, there'll be agitation, tension.
Mm. Does that also come at the same time with a sense of being outside of the sense door?
Kileta pala biso in ti dwada demeshiro bene seka aywa dwada demeshi bene apiyo yao chen ne tabo phila de la
re. Right, concept bengu ya no.
Yes, concepts, more concepts.
Apiyo dwada concept bengu ya no.
The feeling that you're outside means the mind is paying more attention to the concepts rather than to the reality.
Concept and fundamental. How do you see?
There are six types of concepts.
Direction.
Direction.
Yeah. Over time.
Shape.
Color.
Color.
Chain.
Time.
Near.
Place.
Name.
Name.
Now, personal. Over time, what are you doing? Concept.
So when we think of something as associated with somebody, personal, concepts are already there.
The name. I definition of the Ayurvedi kind of the body of definition be that.
That's why when he says object, something interesting in English, when he says object, he says that which is being known, that which is known. And that's why you can know a sound, or you can know there is no sound, but that's also an object because you know it.
Yeah. 他刚才讲一旦累对吗？对，这你来过了。哎，因为细皮的还有，
相当你的其他那个
细皮的，我们没有过阿勇的，大没有过地地下的阿勇，大没过阿勇的。那么现在都厉害了嘛？
对
呀，对你说了，你一旦累，对你了，那是。那后来我的亲。
So this is once he was in Malaysia.
No, 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 no,
and at night in that area there are a lot of cicadas. Burring sounds, and they just fill the air and they don't stop. And so he would, well, that was the loudest thing, that was the most significant. So his mind was just aware of that, this is the object, this is the sound. And he said he was listening, he was paying attention for quite a long time. And then he said his mind sort of
noticed.
He said that besides the sound of the cicadas, the rest of the atmosphere was silent. So there was not only the sound of them, there was also the silence beyond them. And he could he could see both. He could know both.
The chain,
yeah.
I don't know who the young man did. Say the cool thing.
So then there's knowing that, well, for him, that there's not only two objects, but there's two minds that is each recognizing its own object. So generally, we're so attracted to the strong object, the gross object. So when there's pain, we know there's pain. When there's no pain, we think there's no sensation. But actually, that is something too. Yes. So that's why sometimes. He says sometimes an object. To know that something is an object, you have to understand that it is being known and therefore it's an object. If you know it, it's. Yeah, so that comes from understanding where the subtle is also known, although it seems like you're knowing nothing. He says, reality is always paired with the concept that we overlay over it. But he says the reality bit of the concepts that we usually know have to be understood. It has to be understood that the reality is present with the concept. So reality is the object of wisdom. On its own, he says, reality is abstract. That's the word I was looking for yesterday. Abstract. Abstract. So, on its own, reality is abstract. So, it's very hard to get a grip. That's why you can only understand reality. You cannot see it or experience it. You can understand. It's like understanding a principle. Because it's abstract. But he says, when you want to get a feel of what it might be like, he says, Ujyotika has this metaphor. He says, the concept that for us, our experience of all reality is through the concept. The concept is the hook. When you know the concept, the reality is already there with it. So it's just for us to realize what that reality is. So for example, he says, when there is sound by its nature is a paramatta, right? It's a reality. But we don't know the reality. We know the concept of the sound. We don't know the reality of what sound is, or, its characteristics, nature, and so on. We don't know the realities. We know the concept. It's the same with something, we use the word arising and passing away, or something appears and disappears. We see the concept of it, but we don't understand the reality that things are impermanent. It doesn't hit us. We don't realize it just because we see something come and go. Because we see the concept that something comes and goes, but that doesn't mean we understand impermanence. He says, so very often yogis try to look for impermanence. They try to look to see that things are arising.
They try to see
things arising and disappearing because they think that will help them to realize impermanence. But seeing something arise and pass away is just an experience. You've seen something, conceptually you've seen something, but it may or may not give rise to an understanding into the nature of impermanence. He says greed also knows when something comes and goes. You know, we see some food disappear and we want more and more, so we see some more. So, yeah, greed can also see the concept.
Can I ask a supplementary question to that, coming out of that? So, when there is a sense of greed, of lobha, then there's a separation between myself and the thing which is desired. There's, there's myself and there's the thing, the desired object. Mm-hmm. But when I am listening to the silence, then I don't desire the silence.
Mm. Yeah.
So... But is there still a separation of the knowing mind, the mind state, and the silence?
Yeah.
So how can there still be separation then? Is there, because if I'm just with the silence, is it really, am I separate from the silence? If I know it, so I know the sense I am.
He says they are separate in nature. And therefore it feels like they're separate. In fact, they arise together, right? But sometimes we will feel that there is a distance still between the knowing and the experienced object. And that's because there's still some concept that's part of what you're aware of. He says when we begin to realize that there is a knowing and a known, he says we feel they're separate. After we know them for a long time, we start to feel like they're one, because in fact they arise as one, but they have different natures. But he says the understanding that they are different will never go away, that they are separate, they are two, but they're one. He says the same phenomena, the same experience, or whatever you call it, the same moment. It's the same mind, the same knowing, the same object. You know, but depending on how developed your understanding is, or whether some other understanding is developing, then he says your view of that same thing can be very different. The center, the Koreans have the interviews together, because we get translation. And So one yogi was saying that, you know, he sees that the mind and the object are separate, there's two. Mm. And Sierra said, yes, that's correct. Then went on another guy, said, you know, he says he feels like the mind and the object are one, they are arising together. Sierra said, yes. And then another yogi piped up and said, Sierra, you're just like, you just say whatever, you know, this is what, like, why is there no consistency? So to each his own, yeah? Whatever you understand at that moment, that's what's right for you, that's fine. So that's why when you have a vipassana insight, he says you really get shocked because you see, you realize something about it that you could never imagine possible. Because it's a reality. He says because our general state is delusion. We always have that view. And then suddenly, when the window of Panya opens a little bit and shows us another view, that he says always feels like something out of the blue.
Opposite.
There's a Sierra and Brahma who said, don't think about avipassananya. Don't think about what an insight could be like. He says you will definitely get the opposite because you can only think about it conceptually. It's nothing like the real thing.
Opposite.
Because when we don't understand, we have to imagine. And we can only imagine with our limited understanding.
Concepts.
Today, during the guided meditation, Sierra kept saying, thinking is mine.
Feeling is mine.
The reason he's saying this is so that we become familiar with, we get familiar with this concept. In order that we eventually actually see that it's mine. Now we'll see thought. We may sort of think it's mine, but to have it hit us that this is just mine. And there are also yogis, he says, who they think the mind is something else. They think the mind is something special. It's not this everyday thing that is with us all the time. They're looking for the mind, but once somebody is looking for the mind, there's something wrong. Because everything that's happening, everything there is mind. They're just not recognizing it. They shouldn't be looking for it. How can we know it's the mind? We can only know because it's when it functions, when it manifests itself in unlike the other sense doors, you cannot conceptualize the mind too much. You cannot look for the mind. It doesn't have a shape, color, sound, anything, you know. So you can only know it by its movement or you know, this mind has happened, like it's thought, so it's thinking, so that's the mind was thinking. But if we don't have this, some people, if they're not told that this is the mind, then they may think, but they don't think that was the mind. Hunger and feeling hungry.
Desire to eat.
Hunger is obvious, he says.
Desire about it.
Where is the desire? Where does desire happen?
In the mind.
Where do you feel it? This desire to eat. Is there a place for it? How do you know you want to eat? You just know you want to eat it. It's very different from the hunger itself. But for many people, hunger and the desire to eat are one thing. It's not two different natures. Unless you pay attention to yourself, you see the difference, the different natures of one experience.
They're always there, aren't they, both? You can't have one and not the other.
You can have a desire to eat when you're not hungry.
Yeah.
He says, where do thoughts arise? In your head? So is it on the right or the left side? So you see, these are the concepts. Once there's a place, there's a concept. So that's not the reality. Some people feel like the thoughts, the sounds, you know, the mind is talking. They feel like the mind is talking somewhere here. Often yogis do this. So wherever we deem the mind to be, that's where we will feel like it's experienced. Unconsciously.
And we can just observe that?
He says when you are able to objectify thought, when you're able to know that thought is what you can observe, he said you can actually see that, well, I would say you, but awareness is watching thought and they're both happening, yes, you can. But when you are not able to remember that thought is an object, he said that's when the mind quickly gets absorbed in the object and in the thought, and then starts, you become a thinker. So you see, like, it's different between when wisdom is present and when it's not. When the understanding that this is the object that's being known is there, you can see it, and then sometimes it slips away, and then you don't see it, you're inside it. So once the wisdom is not present, he said instantly the mind then, you know, the delusion comes back, and then it becomes a person who's thinking the story and when samadhi
concentration
is strong and you have thoughts, but there's not the wisdom that knows that thoughts are big thoughts. Thoughts can seem very real because samadhi magnifies things. The stillness makes everything so clear. Then you might think a tiger is going to jump on you or something, even if. There are yogis who have experienced
this.
He had his eyes open. There was a yogi. He had been sitting and he had a lot of samadhi and went back to his kuti. It was dark in those days, and then in his imagination, a tiger was coming up. He was backing away from the tiger. His eyes open, but the imagination was so real. So the image of the mind door was much stronger than his sight, than his realization of what he was actually seeing. So the
concentration activity or buddha nene dua shower.
So when somebody develops a lot of concentration, but they don't have enough knowledge about the manifestations of that, it can be dangerous because they can scare themselves. We've all heard that some people have lost it while they're meditating, and that's because they develop too much concentration, more than necessary, without enough knowledge, and they're not able to control it, and then they get frightened by these. They start to hear things, and then they believe that somebody is talking to them, whereas our mind talks to us all the time, right? But then it starts to become a personal thing, something, a personified thing. Yeah. You see, even smell can become very real in a concentrated state. An imagined smell, we can actually smell it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to know. I'm walking out somewhere, looking at, and I might be looking at a tree or seeing a tree. Can you tell me the difference? And seeing something where you might get more attached to it, and might see it more closely, or is looking. What are the difference between a, or are they the same?
Seeing
and
looking back
all the time. Looking at the eye on sight, at here. I'm telling the scene. Focus my logo to the scene. See the Kuroma, 180 degree scene. Mm.
Looking is when you intend to look at something. So when you have an intention to actually pick up something to look at it properly, that's looking. But in general, you might not be trying to look at anything. Like when you're walking, you're not necessarily looking at anything, you kind of know where you're going, and seeing is happening, you have a much broader general view that's a bit blur because you're not actually focusing on anything.
Now you look at her, but you can see other things also.
Okay. And which mara is better for staying in awareness?
No object makes awareness better because the awareness has nothing to do with the object. So awareness is something you develop from practicing awareness. So whether you're aware of looking or seeing, you're aware, that's all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just want to go on from there. Today's experience, like traveling through the dam, you are actually, at first I was just driving, seeing, you sort of enjoy the view a bit, the expanse of, but the minute observing my thinking, mind is just quite nothing, just quite neutral.
Yeah.
You can see the beauty, the expanse, but the minute you step down, and you are very near to the edge of that thing, that's the time then I observe my mind, that a bit of fear arising or, you know, so. And also when we first went down to the picnic area, there was a very loud sound of the water. It's as if a big waterfall, but when I look at it, it was just not a big waterfall. So I was just observing how I felt, how it can be very, the sound was like
deceiving.
Just my perception deceiving me. So I just observed, but that you know, that looking down, then the fear comes, or no fear or whatever. But when you're seeing, it's just like that. That's reporting today's activities, you know, in that way. Not only the object, but whatever is happening, the feeling becomes the mind state, the feeling.
But those are objects too.
Those
are objects. Objects are not just outside, but what's in your mind is also object.
So how should we observe?
See, I went to Hong Kong and they went for there was a retreat center on a tiny little knoll or something. And then it was on top of a little, and they had a little YMCA camp there. And he told the yogis, you can sit anywhere you like. Only 5 people sat in the meditation hall. Everybody went down to the side of the water. A lot of people.
So
when yogi was talking about how he went to the, you know, went down to the bottom of the little bowl, and the water's quite far away, it's quite rocky, and he was sitting there with his eyes closed, and you know, it's very peaceful because you hear the water and all that. And then as his concentration got better, he said at one point he thought the water was really close, he thought the tide was coming out, he opened his eyes, it was still far away. So then you recognize how the mind does that, you know, when it's,
yeah.
But he wouldn't have realized that if he was sitting in the Dhamma hall, maybe. But that's not, I mean, it's not always true. There was one yogi sitting in the Dhamma hall, and he got really angry because he thought somebody shouted in his ear. So he looked up to, you know, to sort of glare at the person. Nobody was there. There was something on the far side of the hall. And, yeah. Because when your awareness and your concentration are more present with you, then you feel like the objects are very near to you. Like everything that's experienced is very close to you.
Yes, I had this experience when I was at the Bodhiana hall, that meditation hall. I usually sit quite forward. But they have got a door from the back. You come in from the library. Every time they open the door, the sound is in front where the altar is. I think that somebody is coming, but I know there's no door there. Every time when I sit, anybody opens the door from the back, the sound comes.
I don't think you see me, but she don't. I don't think that you know, she will. I don't think they go
anywhere. It could be an echo, like the acoustics of the hall. Mm. And sometimes also, sometimes we think that we experience, the mind, you know, conceptualizes that objects are experienced here. I'm being aware here. So sometimes when you experience it, you think it's right in front of you. Yeah, there was a yogi doing walking meditation at the center. And then, you know, just like that, because he was quite, you know, getting quite into it. And then because, you know, everything is experienced at the mind, though, he suddenly felt like the sensations of the feet were here. And then he kept trying to put it back there because he's like, it's not supposed to be here. It's But actually what the yogi was experiencing is that the mind is getting more in touch with itself. It's sort of, you know, and so because it's so in touch with the mind and it feels like the mind is here, then he experienced whatever the mind was experiencing in itself.
That a man. No, that is something.
Yeah,
that's
So that's closer to the reality, but you know, we have a concept that it should be like that. So he thought that it should remain as he always experiences it.
The moment we see something, when there's light and your eyes there and the object is there, I mean, looking happens almost in the moment you put a concept in. See something.
Yeah.
The moment we notice that there's a color or a shape or anything, I mean, it happens so fast before you know what you're looking.
Yeah, the concept's already there.
So you have to be really watchful of that. Seeing becomes looking before you know what.
Like in everything else, we can't force the mind to see the reality of the sense that you are observing. So initially you can just allow yourself to recognize that, you know, that much, and then as the awareness and everything gets better, then at some point the mind will realize what sight is, apart from the reality of sight, apart from the concept of it.
Who got that? Knowing mind is very important. Knowing about it, this is only.
Yeah, he says, if we can know the mind that is knowing, if we have that, he says, then because the mind that is knowing is always simultaneously paired with the object that it knows. Mm-hmm. He says if we then have a handle on that, we come close, you know, come closer to what just the object
is. Did I say oh, pair?
He said, say we try to remove color and shape, distance, you know, all these things from sight, what would be left behind?
They are sight, I suppose. The moment you feel, we perceive, I mean, just almost instantaneously, and then it goes into.
But concept is not a problem. It is okay to know a concept. You can know that the mind is concept. You must recognize what is creating concepts. Perception is. That's again seeing mind at work. So you need to recognize it that way rather than fight it. There are very few people who actually recognize perception as at work.
Whenever I check, there is apparently a person here, the same one,
yes,
over and over and over.
Yes.
Particularly on retreats, when I'm doing walking meditation, then this person is what becomes the figure, and it becomes it much more easily somehow on retreats, I can't explain it any better than that. I fall into thinking much more easily in walking meditation on retreats. And the thinker seems to be
me.
The same. Me seems to be me, yes, over and over.
Yeah. I'm trying to understand what the question is that you're asking.
I wonder why it happens more easily.
In retreat. So when you're...
Instead of I'm more close to it or something.
Okay.
I think I'm aware, but then actually the awareness has turned into me, who's turned into a thinker, and again.
ตัวเอกเวเนี่ยตัวเตียทวยกว่าซิงเนี่ยชัดตัวว่าตวยฤบาดิตัวยอยๆสวยเนี่ยดีงาบ่งาดีดีหลูบ่ดีหลูเตียบ่ตัวเช็คหลุดได้อเมษิเนี่ยแหละดีงางาดีมาอเมษิเนี่ยเอ้าตัวอเมษิเนี่ยเตียเตียเวเนี่ยอตวยตวยเนี่ยดีงาตวยเนี่ยแหละสุดาโตตัวกวนเนี่ยดาหมดกันเนี่ยดาแม้นั้นไม่รู้ตีเนี่ยแหละ He says actually a recognition of the reality of what's happening. There is a delusion that I am the thinker. Yes, but in retreat, because you're observing it, you're actually seeing that delusion.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas at home, we're not even really aware that we're thinking.
Right.
So there's just it's just the difference between lack of awareness and awareness, that's all. Yes. And now that you recognize the delusion, that I am the thinker, he says, imagine if the sense that I am the thinker loses itself. Imagine if, well, you can't, but some, if, because you're observing it, suddenly the mind sees that there's just thinking and no thinker.
Mm-hmm.
He said, because you've been seeing it, the difference will be so obvious to you.
There are moments when it seems, I guess, afterwards, I go, oh, there's nothing there. Like a shock.
There are people who've cried.
Actually some fear generally.
Yes, because you feel like, what do I do without me?
I
rely on this me so much, this idea of myself.
How do you stand?
Who am I?
เกณฑ์นี้ตะหยอดตัวซะเนี่ยเว้ยติมาเนี่ยไอ้กุญแจน่ะเว้ยตู้มันใจเนี่ยเอาไอ้กะละมาลิกะละมาเราบ่ตัวโตติโหดูลิตัวโหพ่อมีเนี่ยยกขึ้นมาติมาโหดีมาลานี่ได้พ่อมีอะติยกละได้พ่อมีอะกูดีขึ้นมานี่ได้พ่อมีดิโอเคโอเค
Wisdom and delusion are opposite. He says we all want to understand the Dharma, and then sometimes we understand it, and then we question us and we're like, we don't want it to be like that. But it's only initially. Initially, it's always a bit of a shock. After a while, you get used to it, and then it's just, another thing that you accept for what it is, Our old view, our old way of seeing things, it doesn't really want to accept that it's not that way. We don't want to change. There was a bhikkhuni who had a startling experience of the sense that there is no me, and she had a very strong one. And to talk to him about it, she couldn't do it. The helplessness, she just cried and cried, she couldn't bring herself to speak about it because it was so nothing to hold on to. Just when she thinks about it, the memory of So at the time she had the insight, it was very real. She knew that is true. But once the insight had faded, the old me is back. And it doesn't want to not be there.
Yes.
And it fights. Yes, you want to say something?
I have been sick for the last 2 days, and I know Sia disease. That's the best time to meditate.
Name account of Sia.
But it's really hard. You can see the mind like a ball of wool. But you can't sustain it, because then you get the dribbling nose and the body aches and
when we react, when we don't like what we're experiencing, the awareness cannot be continuous, cannot be sustained.
He says,
when he's been practicing so long and his practice is quite stable. When he gets sick, he says his samadhi is better. Mind's not so busy anymore. The mind more passive, it's not so interested in other things anymore. Much stiller. Nothing's important anymore. So the mind is more inside itself. The experience is very obvious. And so the mind is aware more easily. You don't even have to try. Just know everything.
When
the mind is not very strong in its awareness and all that, he says the body affects the mind. So when the body is weak, the mind also, the awareness also weakens. The awareness is strong though, He says when we are well, the mind is like, I want to do this, must do that, must do this. But when the mind is sick, it's like,
I don't want to do anything.
So the mind can't talk.
So is it because she has aversion? That's why the S.
The fact that she can't sit still shows that the mind is restless.
And also, because I'm on retreat, I want to get better. I'm
fighting.
So it gets worse.
But it's interesting how I had been helping the cooking of Dana.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing it mindfully. Yeah. And then suddenly this mind got clear when I was there.
Sunchen. Because you stop thinking of your sickness.
Mm-hmm. To forget about sickness, stop eating.
Yeah, very clear. Yes.
If due to concentration, and get tense and other stuff.
Yep.
What should you do in that situation?
Sorry, if due to concentration, what other stuff?
And other stuff might come up. That's
other stuff,
a problem, you know.
Yes.
Tension.
Yeah, and other things.
Yes.
And what should you do in that situation? Should you stop your practice or change your practice? Or
so you're saying that this stuff comes up because of concentration?
I don't know.
So in the practice, when things come up in your mind, things that bother you.
When the practice goes wrong, it's not joyful or
what should you do?
Yes, it just goes.
Okay, concentration.
The experience is all wrong. They're all different. You know.
Why do you say the experience is wrong? There is no wrong experience. Experience is just what it is. There's only an aversion to an experience, but an experience is not wrong.
Experience, no good, no bad.
So, do you mean if you're experiencing something that's difficult, how do you handle it?
Yes.
Okay. So, Achyutaya Kama.
Whenever
we experience something that is difficult for us to experience, to observe in a calm or neutral way, he says that's when the object, whatever we are experiencing, is not the right thing to observe anymore. Because what it has resulted in is a reaction in the mind that is observing, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yes? So mm-hmm. you feel aversion to observing this, you feel resistance to the experience. You don't want to have the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that, at that time, this is what you have to look at, is actually the resistance itself.
Feeling, right?
So you come back to your feeling.
And attitude here.
A state of mind. You can check what your mind is thinking about that experience. What is your attitude towards the experience?
So you shouldn't back off from practice altogether. You should still do
it depends.
Type of inquiry.
Do you want to talk to him about this later?
I could.
You couldn't?
I could.
You could, yeah, maybe that would be better.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, do. Tu alu jaya jalan, tapi si pelu ni ada pelu nama apa pelu yang kau melu. Mau itu tu lah pelu di cakap pelu.
Yogis
sometimes say to Seattle, it's hard to meditate, it's difficult to meditate. But meditation is just knowing what is happening. There's nothing difficult about that. We can't even help knowing what's happening, particularly when it's difficult. We can't even get it out of our minds. You know, it's like in our face, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he says there's no such thing as difficult to meditate. What is difficult is that we find it difficult to have to go through that experience.
We cannot get what we want.
We want to have stillness. We want to have a good experience. We don't want to have to work through this experience as a way to be mindful. That's what's difficult for us. It's not the experience itself.
My thing is very simple. No need to be good anymore.
Whenever we suffer, when we have any kind of suffering, we think of that as a bad experience, as not good. We want to be able to meditate on it in the right way so that we don't have, we will stop suffering. But in fact, he says, the right thing is to, if we can understand that suffering also is just an object. The difficulty that we're experiencing is also something that we are knowing in the moment. So we are in fact meditating already. So this, you know, recognizing of our attitude towards what we experience is very important. To realize that it's our attitude, you know, that colors, that judges this experience as bad or good. Mm-hmm. And it's not that good or bad is not a fundamental characteristic of the experience. So, Sarah says, for example, it's quiet, completely quiet, silent. Is that good or not? Is that good or bad?
Good
or
bad? Good or bad?
Silent.
Sorry?
Neither.
Kalam
kalam. I mean, most of people, they think it's nice. Peace. Good. But you never like me here.
Yeah.
But
he asks different yogis. Some people say silence is boring. Some people say silence is frightening. It's all colored by our
lens. I met a Ludhia Mamina. To repeat when I was there, actually, it's a bit. I don't know the rest around the world. I don't know the silence. I'm not in the car. I
don't
know the Mamina. Sit there, my dear, and sit there, my dear, and sit there, my. You think you're out there, you know, there, it's my blue other around you. I experience your young allergy, my. I'm a fear to be car.
There was a yogi who, every time he came on retreat, he would start shaking, he would start getting really agitated and anxious. And the reason he became anxious was because everybody would stop talking. Everybody would go on in silence.
Silent.
And it would create great anxiety in him because the memory it brought back was he was involved in the Vietnam War. And during the war, a lot of his friends died. And when they had to carry the dead bodies, when they had to carry the dead bodies, nobody was allowed to speak. They had to carry them in silence. Everybody's in fear because the war was still going on. So everybody was really grim and silent. And when he was on noble, when people are on silent at a retreat, that's all it brought back to him. So he'd start feeling really horrible. Didn't know what to do with it. So you see, an experience. An experience is just an experience, but our thoughts and our background colors our view of the experience, our judgment of whether it's good or
bad.
So, if we want to when we practice vipassana, it's very important to recognize one view, what lens we are looking through. So that, you know, we know when it's not right view and when it's right view. Without right view, you know, vipassana is not happening, but you can recognize it's wrong view. And particularly when we're trying to deal with states of mind or thoughts in our mind or experiences, you know, mind states that come up. If we think of the mind as my mind, every time we have an unwholesome mind, if we have lust or jealousy or anger, we will resist it because I don't want to be a jealous person and I don't want to be an angry person. And so we resist it, whereas it's not me. It's just one of the qualities of mind.
In that case of the Vietnam vet, how was he helped to deal with that situation?
I know, so
Yes, taught him to watch his feelings, the fear that came up, the anxiety that came up, just to watch that in a neutral way. And I think it helped him a bit. I'm not sure. Sierra remembers, I don't remember. Yeah, he said it took a while, but yeah, it helped him to not think about the story. So the main thing is not to allow the mind to, because it's for him it's a trauma, he has to consciously stop thinking and come back to just the feeling, to see that the fear is just a feeling. And not associated with the thoughts. Mm.
So if the mind started to produce flashbacks,
yes,
how would one deal with that?
Sika flashback to Peter Elu, a take a hurry, but we're poor as a
memory up
first. Probably you have to remind, theoretically you have to let the person understand what memory is. Memory is something that comes about, and memory is not reliable. You know, memory is just a thought in the mind, just an image that the mind has
created. Not personal.
It's not real, it's not here now. And you have to tell the person that so that when they have the flashback, they can bring these thoughts or ideas to bear on the view to
which from Monday, image.
He told a story this morning about a yogi, another yogi that he met, who had been severely abused when he was young, and he always, every time he went for a retreat, he would tell the teacher about, about what he had suffered, and that would help him a little bit. You know, to feel better, but it didn't take away all the feelings that he had. He didn't stop his suffering. He couldn't seem to get out of it. And that particular retreat with Sierra, he had wanted to tell the story, but Sierra's thing is always, don't tell the story, because the story is not real and it's not here anymore, so it's not important. That's why. And so in the crowd also with many people, he sort of didn't say anything, and Sierra was telling him to, remember that feeling is feeling, and feeling is just a feeling, and
image
is just an image in the mind, and so on. And then when he, after the interview, as he was walking back, he was really upset, because on retreat he's filled with all these memories already. And he was kicking himself for not telling Sierra the story, for not insisting and telling Sierra, because he was feeling so lousy. And then he said, somehow his mind sort of said to him, well, so what if you told Sierra the story? What would he say? And of course, that's the nature. Once he asked that question, then the mind of course told him what Sierra had said, a feeling is just a feeling, and a thought is just a thought. But somehow, because he was being mindful, and all of it just came together, and bam, just then, that's exactly how he saw it. Suddenly, it was just a feeling. It was just a thought. It wasn't everything here. It was just the nature of what it was, and it was as it is. And he was suddenly free. He couldn't believe it. The next day, for the interview, then he told Seattle this story of how he did, and he was quite happy because he felt much freer than he had for a long
time. Every retreat to when I leave my house, I have to 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 leave my house, Yeah, I don't see it all. And then do this room, me like. Yeah, I'm very much happy. But come out of the room, too, that's happy.
Okay.
I'm not doing a hard job. So I told you, same, I'm able to do that, boom, I can have something like that. I can say, the truth, when I did it. ยาชิชิจะมาเสียมาพอเสียมาแล้วดูฮิสทรีของหน้าของเนี่ยหน้าบาดก็มีแล้วดูคอนเซ็ปต์น่ะคู่ผมดูตู้เนี่ยไอ้คอนเซ็ปต์ที่ไอ้ตู้เนี่ยไอ้เนี่ยคือว่าตะกั่วรีทรีทรีทรีวันไหนดาขึ้นมาดูตะดาวดูรีทรีก็อารมณ์ที่ไหนที่ไหนเนี่ยเซ็นเตอร์ที่ชื่อเนี่ยเราไอ้พวกชูซ่าไอ้นั่นคู่บางตัวเลยดูนี่รีทรีละมาพอดูคอนเซ็ปต์ก็เปลี่ยนมาเนี่ยทีนี้ลาคอลลี่ดิโลก็
มันได้ไอ้มาเนี่ยมันได้ไอ้ซ้ําสิเนี่ยเราก็ช่วยกับบางคนนะที่มาไลฟ์กูคอลลี่ดิมาแล้วตัวนั้นเออแล้วกูอ่ะไอ้พวกมันช่วยไอ้พวกมันช่วยได้มั้ยไอ้ไอ้ชินะชินะไอ้พวกไอ้เนี่ยจะชินยาอยู่เออแล้วก็เนี่ยเดี๋ยวว่าอนาเธอร์โยคีที่อ่ะบาอาจารย์เค้าจะคอนเซ็ปต์จําอยู่คอนเซ็ปต์เราช่วยตัวในคอนเซ็ปต์คอนเซ็ปต์กูพี่นายเองรู้สึกเปล่าครับ
Sarah's explaining how we, you know, we hold on to things, our concept of things and how it affects us. There was a yogi on this particular retreat, and she had, she told Sarah, she says, in a retreat, after about 4 or 5 days of being mindful, she can't sleep anymore. And when she can't
sleep,
and she's been and it happens to her every retreat, she said, and she can't sleep, and but the thing is that if she can't sleep for 4 or 5 days, she gets, you know, her anxiety levels really build, so she has to take a pill. If she doesn't, she's starting to go berserk, right? So she has to calm herself, and she, you know, it really bothers her. So Seattle asked her history, asked her when did it begin. It started on her very first retreat. This happened on her very first retreat, and it had followed her since then. What happened on her first retreat was she was practicing, and as usual for yogis, they have this achievement attitude. So after a few days, trying to get what you think you should be getting, frustrated when you're trying too hard. So once you're trying too hard, the mind is agitated, there's more tension, but they're putting in more adrenaline, so she can't sleep anymore. And then she couldn't sleep the rest of the retreat. But what stayed with her was two concepts. He said, the concept of a retreat. So every time she went to a retreat, she came with the anxiety that she might not be able to sleep. And then the second concept was that she would try to sleep, because she thinks sleep is necessary. Yes? So that's the second concept. Sleep is necessary. So Sierra told her, he said, well, forget it. He said, tell yourself you're not on retreat, you're on holiday. And he said, if you can't sleep at night, sleep in the daytime. I don't care if you sleep. So long as when you're awake, you're aware. You don't have, you know, I don't care if you sleep when you need to.
Don't make a yogi.
Yeah, he said, don't be a yogi. You know, just because they've been practicing for years. They're not, you know, like all of you, they're not people who are, you have to tell to try to be aware. They're trying to use it in life all the time anyway. So, but retreats are the problem. So she slept that night.
Hey, trauma, dharma hall trauma. I mean, how do you do it?
See, I've not seen many people with dharma hall trauma. But it's serious. Huh? They can't go to the dharma hall. Approaching the dharma hall, or even just walking past it creates
tension.
Imagine how much suffering they've been going through in the dharma hall. How much they've been forcing themselves in the dharma hall. Because they're forcing themselves. They're already suffering. They're doing something wrong. They have some wrong concept. They don't know it, but the place for this to take place is in the dharma hall. And he says sometimes yogis are really, he feels sad for them. They do months of retreat like that. After a long time, some of them walk around with a band of tension in their heads, or tension at the top of their head, or something.
A hallucination, you know?
Yeah, and it's like a hallucination. Because of the anxiety, it always sticks there. It's not really there. It's just the anxiety that brings it up.
There's some people
who come 7 months of practicing intensively, inverted commas, and come with some kind of headache in their head, which comes manifest suddenly when they sit meditation. And it takes him a few months. So then he explains and everything, 1.5 months of relaxing and all that, So for them, in fact, you can't even use the word meditate because it's associated with meditation. So he has to tell them you're not meditating, you're just like knowing yourself or being aware or something. You're not meditating. So you have to change the way they think about it, you have to wait for the mood to, you know, the anxiety to, for them to relax, feel more comfortable, that nothing threatening in this environment. Nobody's going to scold him for not practicing in the Dharma hall, things like that, lots of things.
The children, tiny position of Yaman, think a lot of Satiri. Don't move.
This is brilliant, Yogi. He's been for years. He's had this for years, and Sarah's been trying to work with it for years with him. Now, so every time he comes on retreat, the moment he takes a sitting position and he sits very well, like this, very straight, the moment he takes a position, he gets this headache.
Sit like this, then get on
with it. Yeah, so he's got a headache and he can't find his rising, falling, nothing. Everything becomes so gross that it's too subtle or something. It's just nothing is observable. But he tries very hard. And Sarah told him not to try and all that. But this time, Sarah said he watched him and he realized the moment he sat, he was already tense. Because he has this thought. The moment he says, can't move. And then everything comes in.
Meditation is, don't move.
So this time, Sierra told him to sit like he's selling
something.
Because it's only about being aware, so Sierra said, don't sit in that position. So Sierra said, sit like this. Sit like you're selling something in the market. After a few minutes, like maybe 10 minutes, change. Do something else. Do something else, like stretch out his feet or turn the other. Because he is aware. It's just he's got this horrible association with this blocked hand every time he sits in the proper position. Yeah, so it's like a psychological block. Lock that he gets into.
Meditation about that. He was quite involved.
First, he tried to get him to change the idea of meditation. Then, you know, even his object, he was, you know, told not to take those objects that he tries to change. And then now finally, he's even changed his posture in meditation, you know. Because the pattern in his mind is so strong, you know, the moment he does something associated with the path, because he practiced very, very hard in the past, so the habit is also very, very strong.
Well, I just wanted to say a big thank you because it's helped me enormously focusing on awareness rather than thinking meditation.
Yes,
it's helped enormously.
Meditation can give a lot of trouble. It's when we've had the word meditation associated with some wrong way that we took it to be. There was a, I think in Seattle's lay person, one of his friends was a Muslim. And if you said to him, come meditate, and all, of course, no, you know, it's like, or something. But so Sierra said to him, he said, can you feel the touching sensation between your fingers when you, like, you know, tap your fingers together? And he got really interested, and Sierra would ask him, do you feel it on the index finger or the thumb? He got really interested, and he watched it for hours because they're sitting in the shops together, right? Selling their own wares.
Meditation about the learning.
He did call it meditation, but there he was paying attention. Very, yeah, so. He says when it's touching, is it one or two? One touch or two touch?
Very interesting. Never have both his hands.
Which side is more obvious? Does it feel like it's touching more on the index finger or the thumb?
I clearly don't have a little bit.
He tells children to do this. Which side is it more obvious? This side or that side?
Each is like a grammar.
Yeah, he said, everything is curious. Sorry?
You said it on a talk in America, but never explained what it was you were doing. I always wondered.
Well, America, wale dilo tirao, usen diha me no kare, tla na, share, javi ro ro balo ne mangu tirao, you know.
Thank you.
Wow.
Who bloody are, sinari,
he said, try it now. Which side is
more?
Because he has something else to say. Most people think it's more on the thumb because there's a larger area on the thumb. But he says, actually, it depends on where you put your attention. If you put your attention in this, that's your
It's
a weird concept because before he heard it and just thought to myself, feels more like the index finger, but when you say thumb and you put your mind on thumb, you feel it.
So put on both sides and you see two.
Yeah.
Because the index finger is one which moves.
So that's what he wants to say. The object is never the full picture. Where's the mind? How is it working? That makes the difference to how you experience the object.
You kind of create your own experience.
Yes. Because of the mind. Can you create Nibbana? I hope so.
Yeah, I do.
Yes, you can. The false one.
Yeah.
If you're creating it, yes.
If you're creating it.
Yeah. Give me a
little
bit of tea now, Pia. Give
me a little bit of tea. Give me a little bit of tea. Give me a little bit of tea. Give me a little bit of tea. Give me a little bit of tea. Give me a little bit of tea. Give me a little bit of tea. Give me a little bit of tea. Give me a little bit of tea. Give me a little bit
He says, all of you have your feet on the floor or touching something. He says, do you feel hardness or softness?
Yes.
He says, but you know, when we're given instructions and we're told, oh, when the feet touch the floor, no, the touching, then we that's what we make our goal. Then we don't realize every other thing that could be experienced in between. We just think touching, we don't think specifically anymore. We don't feel any of the things that are there anymore.
Yeah, you feel the softness of your
skin.
Your
skin is soft.
Soft.
But floor is a rock.
Yeah. But do you say to me, Mara, if you're a little,
I don't know.
ဘာလို့ဒီစိတ်ဒီအမှန်တပြီးတော့စေကဟိုဘက်ကနေမတော်အထိပဲရှိတယ်ဘယ်လိုလဲတွေးလို့မရဘူးကြည့်လို့မရဘူးနောက်ပါဝင်တာတွေးတာနောက်ကြည့်ကြည့်မိနာမျိုးလုံးတစ်ခုချင်းဘာလို့တစ်ခုရမလဲ
He says we have two eyes, why do we only see one picture? Scientifically it's the brain that puts it together, right?
Focus mulo wa ni naku bien.
He says don't focus. Just sort of blur your sight and it'll become two. I guess that's how we know the 3D pictures, right? You know those 3D
focus pictures? Focus mulo wa taku de chida.
It's because we focus that we see one picture.
You can focus on the low door. Naku shi de. Yinwen naku shi de.
He says if we don't focus there is two views. Two pictures that are
The
mind is so fast. In one split second, it knows so many things by itself.
Already.
We can know hearing and seeing at the same time. Yes?
အလုံးဘက်ကနေတော့စိတ်ကအလုံးလုံးစိတ်အများကြီးလုံးလို့မရဘူးအများကြီးလည်းမရဘူးစိတ်ဘက်ကနေမှာစိတ်ကိုဘူးတာဖြစ်တာကြွန့်နေတာမျိုးဆိုတော့သူကတစ်ချိန်ထဲမှာစိတ်ကိုဘလောက်အလုံးလုံးလဲဆိုသူ
So when we stay with the object, when we are trying to see the object, we don't notice what's happening in the mind. We miss so much because everything is happening in the mind. But if we stay with the mind, we see everything that the mind is doing to experience things. And then you see a lot of what? The work of knowing the object, naming the object, you know, remembering the object, all these things are being done by the mind.
Yeah.
Oops.
It happens so fast, there's no time to get into it.
It's only because our awareness and our wisdom is not quite
so when we
so focused we're targeting something to know rather than trying to find out what can we know, you know. If we don't focus then you know there's a broader perspective waiting to see what might come into relief into you know. And if you continue to notice like that, if you continue to be aware of things like that, he says this awareness will grow. This being able to know becomes stronger and stronger. Then slowly all the stuff that's blurred initially when we're just knowing becomes more and more clear. Because that knowing is getting stronger. So when you are able to know like that, he said, then if you try to focus on one object at a time, then you know how much tension there is in trying to focus on objects rather than just know what the mind is doing. We really need to just be able to naturally know what the mind is doing naturally. Then our sense of the fact that this is not personal, a personal process, that I am not in charge of this, even the meditation, you know, everything is just, the mind is doing its own work of being aware and everything becomes more clear, obvious. But when we put in effort to focus on an object or whatever, he says, this sense that I am doing it, I am the meditator, you know, I am making effort, I can see, I have experience, becomes very strong. Actually, it is just nature at work. That's what we need to realize, that it is knowing, it is realizing, it has experience. It is happening.
Where do those concentration practices come in then on an object in your practice then? Isn't that a main part of spiritual practice? Concentration on object, or isn't it with vipassana at all?
Some of the vipassana schools have it. Ayuntaku, Tamadi, Yura, Era. Well, For beginners, that's a practice.
You can start with your one object.
Because they don't know what to do, so you get them to focus on one object so that they know how the mind is working, to know. But once you can know that, then you can try to know other things. Or try to know the mind itself. It's just for us yogis, you know, we follow what we're taught. And you know, the whole world is teaching us to, most of the practices are to focus on the object and all, that's what we do. Yeah.
So,
The Buddha taught many methods of, you know, practicing, and there are the practices that go from the object and there are the practices that go from the knowing.
Okay.
Maybe about 15 years ago, I was doing Tai Chi, and I was a lay person. So when I started with the short set, I was okay. And after some time, we did the long set. The short set was 15 minutes. The long set was half an hour. Then as I did it progressively, I became short of breath. And as I'm doing it, the breath was very short, and I had to keep on breathing like that. Mm. So after that, I was telling my husband, he's passed on now, but I was telling him, maybe something wrong with my heart. Then he took me to see the cardiologist and had the ECG done, and he said, nothing wrong with your heart. Then my husband told me, I think you don't know how to relax. So I think that is quite a big problem for me when it comes to meditation. So can Siado please advise me on how to?
When Sarah went to Hong Kong, a lot of the yogis do Tai Chi in the morning. And Sarah would do Tai Chi with them. He loved it because he says, every moment, there's so many things to be aware of at the same time. You can't focus, but you can
know.
He says, you're moving like this. What do you focus on? But you can know both at the same time. And he said, that's perfect. And you move the hands and the legs at the same time, but you can know it all at the same time. Awareness is already doing its work. You're aware. You can't focus too much, so you relax. The reason you're getting short of breath when you're doing the Tai Chi is because you're using too much concentration. You're trying to pay attention to all your movements with too much intensity all at the same time, but that's why you're getting short of breath. Uh-huh. So the thing is to realize that you don't need to pay so much attention. It's like yoga as well. It's always a coordination between the movement and the breath. Where, you know, some postures, as you move into the posture, you breathe out, and as you move out of the posture, you breathe in. But if you just stay with the mind, you'll be aware of everything you're doing. You're aware of the movement and how you have to breathe. But if you try to pay attention to the movement or to the breath, one at a time, he says you probably forget to breathe when you're moving or things like that. But if you don't try to control those things and you just stay with your mind, just know yourself, then everything just happens by itself. Thank you.
Okay.
I was going to say, for me, the greatest freedom came from knowing that bhavana meant developing the mind and not bhavana equals samadhi.
That's why it's very important to define things right from the beginning. Yeah, what are we doing? We need to know that. He says, no matter what work we do, if we are clear ahead of time how what the work is about and how we're going to do it, he says then that work is much, you know, more powerful. That's why he keeps, you know, he gives these reminders during the sit and all that to keep reminding us, because we forget. This is what we're doing. We're not trying to do that. You know, we're just being aware. We're not trying to stop
it.
But the defilements, you know, they will keep doing their work. They'll make us forget, not remember, you know, try to achieve, etc.
Yeah,
he says, so when we meditate, it's a good thing to always check. Because when we check, you know, we have to use the wisdom. You have to check against our knowledge base to see whether we're doing the right thing. Otherwise we get overzealous, we get so eager to get to the task, we forget about whether we're doing it efficiently, you know, effectively. Yeah, we forget to think about
it. We set ourselves goals and targets.
Yes, this is the nature of defilement. It looks for the result. It wants a result rather than the work of how wisdom works is it thinks about how it should do the work. How it should do the work. What are the causal factors, you know, that need to be fulfilled to do this work effectively. That's what wisdom thinks about and tries to fulfill the causes. Often it feels to him like people don't have enough of information about meditation or bhavana, and they're sort of fighting in the dark sometimes. Sometimes when you ask the teacher will scold you, so you're afraid to ask. It's embarrassing.
We talked about it yesterday, about what the right questions are to ask. For me, quite often, or every now and again when I sit, it becomes stable and quiet. And I feel that the body relaxes. That's normally the first thing. And then sometimes I feel something that I would describe as a pressure. It's not really in the body. It's more kind of in front of the body. And quite often it's very strong. So the mindfulness goes naturally to that. And sometimes there's a bit of fear, especially on the beginning, because it was kind of like, what is this? or excitement, there's something happening. And for me, what I was beginning the question with is now, what are the right questions to ask? Because my understanding from what I'm hearing is to turn the mind to the attitude and eventually back to the mind itself. And what would be the right questions to ask?
To Mania Piora, who Bamingo Mithil level, Bamingo Abutu at Joshim Lane, Chima, Mingo May, Gaum level, Tiam level, the
Boa,
Eratua, the Matua, Tuatu, and Matua Tiny, or Ningne, Ilare, Sika. The period never pillar less rock. Shima, pressure to Kushila the Lubin. And I could remember more than Shima. Pressure to Kushila the Lubin. I looked at it. The Kalinis, so we are all Tisharo, Nanet, Pintan in it. Tisharo Sika, Ayo Yabir. The Kalisika, the Nesso in it. The Kalisika, or the Kupianers of Lunan excited Peter Demet.
အခုကဒီဘောပါတော့ဦးဇင်းပြောတာကိုယ်က attitude ကိုပုံတိထားမယ် attitude ကလည်းစိတ်ကိုပုံတိရမယ်အဲ့လိုမျိုးပဲကိုရအောင်ဘာမေးလို့မေးအောင်ဟုတ်တယ်အဲ့ပုံမှာစိတ်ကဘယ်လိုဘာဖြစ်ဖြစ်နေလဲပေါ့ဆိုတော့ Then the mind feels more settled because there's nothing special about it, it's just an experience. And then what you can then recognize is that there is awareness.
Mm.
And just keep recognizing that awareness is still present.
Yes. Yes, that's not like what happens in that, just stay for it.
That's all.
And
just scattered
data, that's it.
Yeah.
Meditation,
Yeah. Awareness, that's right. Awareness is cultivation of awareness. Meditation, cultivation of awareness. If you're aware of awareness, you're cultivating it.
Right. Because there is, it's not that I like it or don't like it. It's just a feeling. It's not like disturbing or nice.
Yeah.
It's
just an object.
Just an object.
Just a nature. Right. This is no problem. We use this object to grow our awareness and wisdom. That's all.
If you look at it, when you've been observing, both for a long time, you start learning other things about it, about its nature and stuff.
Okay.
It is possible. It is possible if there's a pressure that your mind might mentally be exerting a bit too much energy, so it would be helpful to check in your mind to see if your mind is adding pressure to the effort it's putting in. See whether you can relax it. Just observe it to see what you can notice.
Well, it's just like when something pushes on your skin.
Mm.
Oh.
That kind of pressure.
Hello.
It's not kind of like a headache or something.
Actually, it's not outside you. What you're experiencing, again, is just now as he explained. The object is the experience is being experienced in the mind, and you're seeing it in the mind. And generally, when we have our eyes closed, we kind of think things are here or here, something like that. And that might be what the mind is doing, conceptualizing its experience of itself in the mind.
The only change is like sometimes that it gets stronger or it moves slightly.
He says, and regardless of, whether Tiara uses the word be aware or be mindful or watch or observe or notice or whatever, initially none of us really know what is the balanced amount of effort to use to be aware.
Mm.
We might get it for a moment, and after that, of course, naturally the mind will go into too much or too little, too much or too little.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something we have to learn about as well. It's a skill that we pick up from observing what happens with how much effort we put in.
I often check is how I'm doing afterwards, and if the mind is clear and if I'm relaxed.
Yeah.
And that's normally the case. So I think there's not focusing too much involved.
Because if there's a defilement, you won't feel relaxed.
Yes, there is other things in there. It's not that clear and relaxed.
Isn't it a natural cause that you don't take it as your object? It just becomes your object. You get something like that. You have pressure in your, like a big ball here.
Mm-hmm.
it's your mind wants to take it as object. It takes it like, you know, it's something different and it goes for it. It's not like, oh yeah, I'm going to be aware of my hearing. No, you don't want to do it because it's, you don't take it as object.
No.
It just becomes the object.
So yeah, the mind's attracted to it because it's obvious.
Yeah, so because you translate it as take it as object. So it kind of sounds like, you know, like you do this and then, you know, like then you do it. It's doing.
I'm just colloquially speaking, yes, I'm thinking very carefully about how I'm saying it.
So it is not that, you know, you're not, this is not like hearing this, doing this.
I think when I say the mind takes it as an object, I'm talking about the mind naturally does it on its own. I'm not talking about I have chosen to take it as an object, but the mind has chosen it as an object.
Yeah, so if mind becomes one pointed. It's not like you don't start going for the other point, you know, other objects. You just want, you know, the mind calls for that one point, right? But you don't choose one point in this.
No, you don't have to choose one point,
But the mind calls for it, right?
It can, yes. What is the question?
The question was that, so you don't take it. So, you know, like, because use the word take.
I think we may be talking about it differently. It's also partly, I think it's also partly Burmese translation. In Burmese, when you say the mind has paid attention to, like, the mind just naturally paid attention to it, the literal translation is the mind took it as an object. That's the words they use in Burmese. So, seka, anyhow, you liked it.
So but it means you don't the mind. Choose an object,
no,
you
the mind naturally took it as an object. So,
that's pretty obvious.
What I said. Yeah. But you were talking about one pointedness. Do you want to go through that?
No, but I mean, if the mind calls towards something.
If the mind is naturally leaning towards one pointedness, if the mind is naturally going towards one pointedness, let it do that. But if you want to practice vipassana, then, you know, while the mind is one pointed, you can also realize that simultaneously the mind hasn't actually blocked out other things, because the mind is all knowing. In fact, even when it's one pointed, there are other things that the mind already knows that, you know, that are in its consciousness. For example, he says some people, they watching their anapana and a thought arises, and then when they look at the thought disappears. But this is not what he wants people to do. For example, the mind is naturally on the breath, and a thought arises, they notice the thought, and then they just go on to the next moment. They don't try to change the attention of the thought. They know the breath, they know the thought, and then the next moment comes, maybe it's the breath of the thought, you know.
Why are you disturbing the one point if you start looking for object?
It depends on your goal. If you want one point,
So
you must get this clear. What you learn for jhanic practice is different from what you learn in this retreat. Yes? Because the goals are different. If you want to develop one-pointedness, then you have to allow your mind to naturally do that and not do what he's saying about, you know, bringing the checking to see what else the mind knows and all that. If you want to do this practice, you know, whether now or later, when you've developed one-pointedness, you can still switch to this sort of practice. At that time, then these are the things that you will want to remember, that besides the thing that the mind knows one-pointedly, there are other things that the mind is also conscious of at the same time. If you can be aware of the mind that is doing that is one pointed. Do you know what I mean? Because the mind itself is one pointed. You can know that mind. Yes? And from there, you can then expand into all the other minds that are already conscious. So, but that's for whenever you want to take up the practice. Don't get confused.
But isn't it, mind itself cannot be aware of many things. It's just you take one thing, one thing, one thing. Like, you cannot be aware of hearing and seeing. You know, like you hear and then you see. You know, it's like a movie, you know, like a sequence.
When the mind is very strongly focused on the object, yes, he says, you cannot take more than one thing at a time. Then it's like a sequence, one after the other, after the other. But he's, like he said just now about, like he said just now about looking and seeing. When you, if you look at this recorder, and you look very carefully, that's what you'll see. But if you notice, there's actually all the peripheral vision, but you can choose to focus in on it completely, which is, and then you can choose to go from one object to the other, and not acknowledge everything else that's in your vision. Yes? But you can relax and not look at anything, and you can see all three recorders at the same time, or everybody else in this room. Nothing is distinct, but everything is seen. And the mind is just like that. The mind is like a river. When you look at a river, it's like a body of water, and that's what we think is mind. But if you look into the water, it's trillions of droplets of water or molecules of water. Yeah. So there's so many layers of mind working simultaneously. And the mind is much faster than we can describe.
Yes, but the knowing itself is happening in one distinct moment. It just appears as simultaneously because it's so fast. Isn't that right?
The experience, the experience,
the
yes. The theoretical mind arises one at a time.
Yes.
Yes. Every moment, but experientially it's impossible.
It's Pashtragabi,
because a trillion mind happen in a second, so how can you know one at a time? Only the Buddha can experience that, But we are not Buddha.
End of this retreat.
What?
At the end of this retreat.
No goals.
I think the argument is the practice. Whether you want it to be a focused mind.
What is the goal of the practice?
Yes. Or a mind which can see more than one. I think that's basically that.
So he says some of the theory about mind, you know, in the Buddha Dharma, it's theory, they call it the Abhidhamma. They explain the whatever of mind, and but not all of it can be experienced practically. And if you try to experience it practically in that way, then because you have already taken the wrong idea, you know, you're saying you can see one moment, one mind at a time, or one experience at a time, but that's already a very gross moment with billions of minds which have already happened, and you think you've only experienced one thing. So it's very important not to get the wrong idea of what your experience
is.
A very famous example of this sort of not being able to do the theory is the Paticca-samuppada. Have you all heard of this?
Yes.
It's the theory of dependent origination. So there's a cycle that's described where something leads to something. The beginning is delusion, which leads to this, which leads to that. And theoretically, the Buddha saw the cause-effect chain, but there are different kinds of causes and effects. causes don't always happen before an effect. In reality, causes and effects arise together. So, this theory of dependent origination, although we theoretically learn it as a chain, what really happens is it just happens like that. And if you understand it, you just understand it, but there's not this separation of you could take a part of experience at Vedana where you could escape from the chain. Yes. So there's this part where the Vedana, instead of the feeling instead of leading to attachment, is supposed to lead to wisdom, but it doesn't happen like that. You cannot stop it. You cannot stop the mind at feeling. Everything is just happening all the time. You can understand something from just observing. When the mind has gathered enough data, it just understands the process. It's not like you split it into atoms.
Look, seeing,
So in this chain of things, you can only see that because delusion is the beginning. In the moments that there's wisdom, that's when the chain is already broken, and you know the escape has happened. But it's not like you can go in and fiddle with the thing. So there are many ideas that are explained, but we can't try to practice every theory that is explained to us. Some things have to be understood in context.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
After about 45 minutes, 50 minutes of vipassana meditation, I feel like my mind is stable.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like my body, whole body is warm or hot,
mm-hmm.
and sweating. It happened 2-3 times,
mm-hmm.
but with some of the meditation, it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to know if it is something to do with meditation or...
What happens when you do samatha meditation then?
It doesn't happen.
For
example, I won't feel warm.
Warm. What do you feel anything or are you just on the object?
After I start to concentrate on my body, I feel a bit hot or warm.
When you do samatha meditation?
No, with vipassana.
What happens when you do samatha meditation?
It's very calm and peaceful.
Yes.
And the feeling is different with some of the meditation.
What is the feeling?
Sometimes my body.
Sorry?
Disappear kind of thing. My arms disappear.
Your arms disappear, okay.
Yeah.
And then?
Oh.
And then?
So. It's different, but this one, I just want to know if this is a normal thing or not.
We put an atom to a camera, and this is a giant. Sure, sure, and new lare, kind of well, new lare, tweaker lare, and have them up here. The mature atom will be a little bit, the mature atom will be a little bit. And I'm not, what, Dad, the middle room, the Mahasi, not a little bit. Sure, and then you tell her, and I'm not kind of cool. I say if I need to worry,
The only difference.
The only difference is that you are aware now of what is happening in your body. What you described about the arms disappearing and all—it happens to people in my. Like when we first began meditation, Mahasi method and all, it happens as well. You know, you do the rising, falling, and sometimes you find your legs have disappeared or your arms have disappeared. What has happened is actually, you're concentrating on one thing. For us, the rising, falling, for you maybe is the anapana. When you're concentrating on one thing slowly, because the mind is becoming one-pointed, it starts to block out other parts of the experience. And that's why you feel like there's no more arms and stuff like that. It's not that they're not there, it's just that the mind is not paying attention to it anymore.
Yeah, with vipassana, it's...
But in vipassana, you're just more aware.
Objective.
Because you are being conscious of your body, so you're aware of what's happening in the body. That's all. That's the only difference. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just a different state of mind, different experience.
Okay, feeling warm or sweating kind of thing is normal?
Yeah, normal. No, no problem.
What you want to then check is to see how you are reacting to it. So now you're feeling warm and you're sweating. Does the mind like it? Does the mind dislike it? Is the mind worried about it? For example, in your case, is the mind worried about it? What is the feeling in the mind? So you continue to investigate.
Experience where
the simplest thing, the right thing is to remember that an experience is just an experience. There's nothing right or wrong about any experience. No experience is ever wrong. All experiences are just as they are. The mind is not quiet. The mind is not quiet. That's all.
That's all.
Think of it as it is. This is just the way it is supposed to be right now.
And now I show that what take that, we take that, losing that vision. How do we show that?
The only thing that complicates the matter is when we think it should be like this, or should be like that, or we like it, or we don't like it. That complicates the experience because we start thinking about it and wondering about it. Yeah, it makes it complicated.
But if I have the thought, it's not right, and I'm aware of that, then that's just another object.
Yes. A twee shire diha mapang lo sinza lai ke da ma diha ti lai ke so le da le a yin
ma phit. Right, it's just a yee ji la twee bu chi ba twee chi le so di twee ya kaung la so la ma la ma na na le bu ba so.
Yes, why?
Yee ji la ma chi ba lo la ma lo bu ba.
Why do we want to recognize thoughts so that we can begin to recognize whether the thoughts are wholesome or unwholesome, necessary or unnecessary, so that we can make wise choices about what goes through the mind.
Yeah.
Benefit or not? Understanding,
yeah. We want that sort of understanding to arise.
I was experiencing a lot of pain, and then when I just thought, okay, there's pain, so let me be aware of it. And then the pain was still there, but there was no suffering. There was still pain, but I was not fighting it.
Why? Normally we are suffering. Now, you not suffer. The mind not suffer. Why?
Not resisting, not fighting.
Why? Why not resisting?
Accepting it as it is.
Why do you accept? Oh, as it is, understand, not.
Yeah.
Try to accept it. And it's not because you tried to accept it. Yeah. It's because suddenly the mind you had that thought.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. You know,
Yeah, she will use them, you know.
If you don't have the wisdom, it's not optional.
End of the
road. It's just the mind that makes us suffer.
Yes, the mind can make you suffer and the mind can save you.
It seems clearer that I'm really wanting the suffering because I'm afraid of what I'll be or I won't have if I don't have it. I get that growing sense that.
Attachment to familiarity.
Even if it's
suffering.
Explore new space is a very. You don't know.
Scary.
Yeah.
It might be better, but we don't know. So we're afraid to explore.
I think that's present right now.
You're attached to what's familiar and you're scared to let go of it.
That's why we're afraid of the next life. We don't know what's going to come. So we want to hang on to this life. And we can't. We don't know what's on the other side. His teacher used to tell him, he said, I know exactly what you are in all your past lives, and I know exactly what you will be in your next life, and definitely not wrong.
You want to know?
Do you want to know? He says in every life you've been Namarupa, and in your next life you'll be Namarupa. Definitely no changing that. So long as the conditions are present for it to continue, that's how it will continue.
It's like a famous Ajanta story where someone had insisted that he reads his fortune, and he said, okay, finally I'll read your fortune. And he looked at his palm for a long time, and a long time, and the man said, yes, yes, yes. The man said, one day you're going to die.
Ajanta, Lutia Patu, Tishelo Dukabeya, Tu Lekana Papu, and now with Sekolo, okay, Papi, Chai, Chino, Lehilu, Lego, Chi, Chi, Chi.
Okay, stop and I see.
What time is it?
Tonight,
please.
Now, why?
Okay. Enough for today?
See you tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have more experience, you can work with growth.
Is it the walk tomorrow? Walk tomorrow.
What?
Walk.
I don't know.
I don't know.
Talking Dhamma gives lots of energy.
Good.